going on, y'all? And thank you again so very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, joining me in studio, the man, as I've always said, who can believe it's not butter, is Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios. Hope everybody's having a good day wherever you are.
He come walking in here with his Arnold Palmer drink, the same as I got. We're drinking lemonades and sweet tea mixes in here today, folks. We're going hard in the paint.
We have a chain called HTO, not H2O, yeah. HTO.
H and then the word T, T-E-A, and then O.
And all they serve is teas. Like, that's it. That's all they serve is iced tea. And when that first opened, I'm like, there's no way that's going to work. Nobody's just going to run a business based on iced tea.
Now, was I wrong? I think they've got some other stuff they serve too. Yeah, but I don't get that. Yeah, we're tea guys.
They have like 30 different types in there.
Yeah. And this is not an ad. It's just something.
It's
the good thing. It's not close to the house. We have to drive a little bit on the other side of town to get it because Kyle and I have already said if it was close to the house, we would have some serious, serious problems. So we've been up to some fun stuff. Not really. We're getting ready to travel. Kyle and I have got travels coming up.
We got a lot of traveling.
We have a lot of travels coming up. We've been slinging books out left and right. Kyle's on a first name basis, not even handshake. It's what's up, homie, kind of basis with the guy at the shipping store. It's been madness. Speaking of madness, I got something to share with y'all.
What do you got?
This is something I've talked about a few times. I don't remember how many of these I've done now. Probably four or five total in the last, say, 6-8 months. But I've got another walking tree story.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I got another one.
I love these.
I have another one.
Are you writing one. These?
No. I should. I need to write a walking tree story. This one.
I need to find a walking tree so I can help. It's a lot easier to move my stand.
Well, I'll tell you something else, too. I want a walking tree to follow me in this sun just to keep me in the shade, strolling beside me. But it would be fun to have like a tree ant that had your tree stand in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And he could just be like, the wind's over there, you know, and he walks.
Before you get
there.
Into your story, I got bad news. My corn crop's not going.
It's what
not
happened?
Good. I'm a failed corn farmer. I don't know what I did wrong. I got to get with the step to figure out what I did wrong.
Oh, no.
I think I picked the wrong variety.
Yeah.
See, I just like bought the seeds on a whim. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Because I've been having so much
You don't
luck.
Know how to farm corn? That's crazy.
Everybody else says it's easy, but it wasn't easy for me. I don't know what happened. They are sad and pathetic.
I put it out and tried to let it grow. It just didn't work.
They look like those baby corn that you see like
Oh,
Thai
nice.
Food.
Yeah. You know, is that how big they are right now?
Yeah, yeah.
Pick them. We'll pickle them.
Yeah. I want big ears, though. I don't know what I did wrong.
You got pretty good size ones now. That's why you keep them cans over them.
Get to your tree story.
He's derailed the story to complain about his corn crop, folks. He's upset.
Yeah, I'm bummed out.
Well, you're doing extra work with the tomatoes, my God.
Yeah.
And peppers.
I've got tons
Bro,
of those.
He keeps bringing me peppers. I have so many peppers. I keep making sauces. And I'm the next patch you bring, I'm going to try to make some like the vinegar pepper sauce where you got to let it ferment it for a bit.
Oh, yeah,
I'm going to
yeah,
get all that yeah. going and set it up and see how that turns out. So walking trees, folks. We're back to walking trees. Southern California witness claims the walking trees at a Green River golf course. If any of y'all ever live down in this area, I would like to know about it. That's right. I'd like to know about this Green River golf course. But this is what it says. This is a true story. We used to sneak into the Green River golf course off the 91 freeway in Southern California to fish. Before we go any further,
Hell yeah.
Kyle and I used to do that at the old Rock 9 up here in town. They used to have the water holes, had some good little fishing, had carp, had all kinds of stuff. We'd sneak up there and fish in the evenings too. So it was good. And it wasn't that far of a walk in. So this is great. But it says there was a long walk in and there were a couple of lakes on the course. One lake, the best for fishing, was at the far back of the course and it rested against a big hill. So one night, my cousin, another friend, and I were walking towards that lake. We were almost there when the trees surrounding the lake suddenly started walking. Now, I know how it sounds, but that is exactly what it looked like. There were maybe 6 to 10 of them around the lake. It was as if we had startled them. Half of them moved away and the other half moved the opposite way. It was crazy. From the moonlight, we could see the silhouettes moving. It looked like the trees had just started walking, as if they were trying to clear out of there right before we got there. We all stopped dead in our tracks and never fished that night. Now, nobody believes the story, but it happened. I've seen a few things in the sky and whatnot, but it's no real big deal. But what I saw was no doubt 100% real. I saw the trees move.
Man, that's wild.
At the back of a golf course, we got walking trees. I mean, look, all jokes aside, you know, we've talked about this. We've covered it. People have done all kinds of other, you know, covers on it and all of this. What could you possibly mistake that for?
I have no explanation.
We've seen everybody
here.
It
doesn't make sense.
Everybody listening to the show right now, unless you have vision problems, you've seen trees in the wind.
Yeah.
You've seen trees in the wind during the day. You've seen trees in the wind during the night. You know what they look like. Would you ever mistaken trees blowing in the wind for trees walking?
No. I've seen tornadoes and I've seen trees fly through the air.
They weren't walking.
But that's not walking.
Exactly. So how do you misidentify the walking nature of a tree?
And not just one person, but
three
people.
Three people saw it on this one. We've had multiple accounts. Like I told you, that one guy, and I still got to look back up and see if that ever turned out to be a real thing.
Oh, the video, the guy that was
with the rope tied to the tree and it moving closer. And I mean, like, what is going on?
I don't know.
The tree ants are waking up. The battle for Middle Earth will soon begin.
I've got one here.
This is it a walking tree?
No, it's not a walking tree story. This comes from one of our listeners named JJ. He says, I'm 18 years old and I'm from Washington County, Missouri. I'm an experienced hunter and have hunted in several states. I have also camped many, many times, but I've never experienced anything like this. I've always been curious about Bigfoot, skinwalkers, and other unexplained phenomena, but I never thought that I would have an encounter of my own. My experience began in late July 2025. I was preparing a new property for deer season by setting up a stand and a trail camera. A good friend of mine, who I will call Levi, was out helping me. We had received permission to hunt the property and were walking toward the back section, where we planned to install the stand. The farther we went, the more uneasy I became. When we reached a tree that looked suitable, an awful smell suddenly hit us. Levi and I immediately looked at each other. It smelled like a mixture of wet dog, a dead animal, and rotten meat. We searched the area for a carcass or something else that could explain the strange smell, and Levi asked, "What the hell is that smell?" I shrugged and I told him it probably was an animal that a coyote or bobcat had probably killed. Privately, however, I knew something about the odor was not right. It had a strong, musty quality, unlike anything I'd ever smelled before. I made sure we finished setting up the stand as quickly as possible. On September 19th, I returned for my first deer hunt of the season. It was a foggy morning, and I was bow hunting. I had awakened much earlier than necessary because I was still unfamiliar with the drive from my house. It was approximately 4:30 a.m., when I reached the property. From my truck, I had about a 400-yard walk to reach the stand. I'd gone only about 50 yards when I smelled the same odor again. This time, however, the smell was nowhere near the location where Levi and I had encountered it 2 months earlier. That frightened me, because it suggested that whatever was producing the odor had moved. I began thinking about what the smell might actually be, but I eventually gathered enough courage to continue walking. That was when I heard one of the most terrifying sounds I've ever experienced. It began as a long, loud howl and was immediately followed by an extremely high-pitched scream. The sound came from the top of a hill on the property, approximately 50 yards from where my stand was. Every hair on my body stood up. Even as I write this account, I still get goosebumps thinking about it. My heart was racing, and I did not know what to do. I stopped and concentrated on breathing until I could control myself. I eventually convinced myself that what I heard was a coyote howl, followed immediately by a screeching owl. I continued toward the stand. By then, it was around 5 a.m. When I reached the stand, I could still smell the same horrible odor. I did not feel safe or welcome out there. I knocked an arrow in my bow because it made me feel somewhat safer. I also removed my large headlamp from my bag in case I saw something moving nearby. The fog gradually began to clear, and I could tell from the sky that the sun would soon rise. I looked toward the hillside approximately 45 yards away and noticed what appeared to be a black opening, or a dark shape. At first, I assumed it was a small cave or hollow that I had not noticed previously. I continued watching it for approximately 2 minutes. Then, the dark shape, which it appeared to be about 3 feet high, rose to a height of approximately 8 feet. I grabbed my headlamp and switched it on. In the light, I saw an enormous, hair-covered, ape-like figure. It was tall and powerfully built, with extremely large hands. I knew it was Bigfoot instantly. We locked eyes. I felt as though we stared at each other for an eternity, although it was probably only just a few seconds. Then, in an instant, it took off sprinting toward the river. I kept my eyes on it as long as I could. Suddenly, it disappeared. One moment it was there, the next it was gone. I immediately climbed out of the stand. I left everything behind except my bow and ran back to my truck. I have only told Levi and the property owner what happened. Levi said that he had other places to hunt and was perfectly willing to never return to that property. The property owner then told me that he had seen the exact same type of figure. He also claimed that on several occasions he had found deer lying in his crop field with their jaws and pelvic bones broken as though they had been snapped like twigs. He said he had heard what he believed was a Bigfoot several times during the 5 years that he had lived there. I have never returned to that man's property, and I never will. JJ.
Yikes.
So, man, this story hits home, not because I've had a Bigfoot encounter, but I know what it feels like walking to your stand in the dark in the morning and you hear something, whether it's a cow or whatever, and you're like, man, what the hell is that? But I would be angry at the owner. I'd be like, look, bro, you've seen Bigfoot out here and you never thought to tell me.
How about a little heads up, man? Yeah. How about a little heads up? Like, be careful
out
there.
That's something I need to know. When I go on X.
We have to start asking, right? They need to put that on those apps.
Yeah, like, I need to know where
there's. Has there been Bigfoot sightings here?
Yeah.
Before I get out, what about Dog Man? Is there anything like that out there? Before I start, because they have to disclose like murders in homes,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Can't we disclose that on land you're going to hunt on? Is like, first of all, are you aware of anything strange and unusual going on out here?
Yeah. Or maybe you don't want to know, because I think that we hunt in several locations where I'm like, man, I think there might be something going on here.
Just, there's one certain spot that it was always hearsay that there might be something, and now it appears like there is something. So
is it the land or is it the person that's on the land? Because sometimes it appears to be attracted to certain people.
That's a really good point. Yeah, it's almost like it finds them. Wherever they go, it picks them out.
Well, in JJ's story, he talks about watching it till it disappeared. Now, what does that mean? Did it disappear into the woods? Did it disappear over
That's
a ridge?
That's kind of what I assumed, is it was just like walking it through till it got, it got out of sight in the
woods.
Right,
or did
somewhere.
It like clearly just disappear like it walked into a portal?
Well, yeah, that could be.
I have more questions.
Yeah.
JJ, if you're listening, please tell me.
Yeah.
More about the disappearance of the Bigfoot.
Jeez. Yeah, and there's nothing worse than you have all that and all you got your bow. You got a bow and a headlamp.
Yeah,
you're
right.
Like, here we go, man.
Yeah, what am I going to do with this?
Here we go. Same thing your ancestor did thousands of years ago. Try to shoot straight and pray. That's pretty much all you got.
I have a problem with shooting straight in broad daylight.
That's true.
You know what I mean? What am I going to do at 5 in the morning in the dark in the fog?
Yeah. Guess you better do a whole lot harder praying. It's the only thing I can do. Like, please don't let them get me. Yeah, man. Yeah, dude. That's a problem. Yeah, I need to have some disclosure on what was there. Speaking of disclosure, Cal and I, and I'm sure a bunch of y'all listening, came from the age of malls.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We loved them. We used to go, that was the thing we did. Right? On the weekends, you could go hang out with your friends there, all that stuff. And yes, for those younger listening, it was just like Stranger Things. You go to the mall, it was awesome. Food court, you hang out with everybody. That used to be the only place you could buy cool caps. You could get some nice clothes, at least from where we lived, because it was really not a lot of places.
I used to like Walden Books, was always in the mall.
And it was simply because of like the covers, like Frank Frazetta style covers on all the books of all the fantasy stuff and all that.
So Spencer's.
Other
places they had that always had wild stuff.
Man, it was a good time. What was the, I remember the first time I went into
Gadzooks.
That was the other one. That's it. I forget.
Right?
Man, some of that stuff's crazy.
Hey, man, it was fun though.
It was fun.
I remember my parents would give me
$5 and say, please, like somebody take him.
Around this time of year when it was getting close to school starting again, they'd give me some money and they'd drop me off and I could literally buy my school clothes. And I always remember that was fun.
Made you feel like a big dog.
Yeah.
Right? You're like, yeah.
You pick it out myself.
Right. Exactly.
Give me some Z Cavaricci's.
I had one pair.
Give me some Jerbos.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I wasn't allowed to have all that cool stuff. Couldn't afford it.
Are those brands even around now?
Probably not.
What was the one the girls always wore? Rocky Mountain jeans. Is that still a thing?
Don't be hating on Rockies.
I'm not hating on them. I'm not. I'm saying
that
you don't
see.
That was
pants with no back pockets.
You don't see them anymore. What happened to them? Everybody had them. They had them.
They're probably still out there. You're just old.
No, I see girls though.
No, which one? I see girls.
I never see anybody wearing. Girls. I never see them in Rocky Mountains.
Maybe you're just not going to the rodeo.
No, that's true. I got Teskies and I don't see them.
Yeah, right. Yeah, surely they're still out there, but maybe not.
Remember, you could get them in every color because girls would have them literally every color.
Y'all listening to how much he looked at girls' butts? Just he's worried about their pants. Listen to
him. All right, move on.
Now he's ready to move on. Yeah, see, now he's ready to move on. Miss Barbara.
Tell us about the mall.
Miss Barbara has this to say. It happened to her back in 2008. Miss Barbara's retiree from Uniontown, Pennsylvania. She's in a wheelchair. This is a whole thing. Listen to this whole deal. This took place, like I said, in the Century 3 Mall in West Mifflin, Pennsylvania. Okay, in the JCPenney men's department store inside the mall in April of 2008. So she says that I was sitting on a bench there in the mall while I went to she was there with her husband. He was waiting on the bench outside while she went into the department store there at JCPenney. She says, while I was there, I noticed another woman with her young children, and they seemed to be rushing out of the area. And one of the children said, I want to see it. But the mother said, no, you can't. Let's go now. So Barbara said, this kind of caught my attention. So she looks over there and near one of the clothing racks, she said, I saw what looked like a small gray man. He appeared very short, very small. He was wearing a red and black plaid shirt and blue pants. And at first, I just saw him from the side. I only looked at him briefly, then turned away because I didn't want to stare. But when I looked back, he was facing me directly. The being appeared to be male. He had no hair, gray skin, large black almond-shaped eyes, and a lumpy, heavily wrinkled face. Barbara says his face didn't look human. It reminded me of an insect. Even though he was strange-looking, I was not afraid at first. He had what seemed to be a pleasant smile on his face. I looked away again because I felt it impolite to stare, and when I looked back the second time, he was gone. So I went to the registration area to ask for security, but no one was around. I then decided to leave the store because my husband and I were planning to attend a movie. I was trying to tell my husband what was going on. He said, wait, we'll just talk right after the movie. So we sat in the back of the dark theater near the exit door. And during the movie, every time that door would open, I looked to see if it was the small gray being. That was when I started to become frightened. Oddly, after that day, I completely forgot about the encounter. I never told my husband what happened. About 2 months later, I saw an article about a UFO sighting in the Tribune Review newspaper. The article mentioned a sighting in Jefferson Hills, which is very close to the mall. When I read it, the memory of what I saw came back. That surprised me because I normally have a tremendous memory. I can remember details from many years ago. I can remember details from many days ago. But somehow this particular memory had faded away. I believe that when the creature stared at me, it caused somehow that memory to fade. But I made a sketch of the guy so I can always remember him. And I now refer to the being as the Cicada Man.
I love the name.
The Cicada Man.
That needs to be a t-shirt.
And she has a little sketch of it, and it legitimately is like a 3-foot-tall insect man.
It's wild.
Built kind of like a gray, but more insectish in the face. And then they talk about this sighting. Look, we like to laugh and make jokes, but I mean, what? They are among us, right? What if that's what it is? They're really just out and about kicking it. Just needed to pick up some threads. The only place you can get cool Earth clothes is where? On Earth. So you got to go down. Right, you got to try to blend in so you can get some cool Earth clothes.
Yeah.
So
you want to, you know, get your drip on.
That's right. You got to look stylish. Folks, speaking of stylish, Kyle and I are going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to talk about a very disturbing piece of stone called Huska Castle. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Y'all, here we go. For this segment, I'm fizzy free. It's just Uncle Ham here, gonna tell you a little story about something creepy. Hope you've buckled up for that. Sitting here chilling in studio, got a little Dungeons and Dragons, what is Honor Among Thieves playing over here in the corner on the TV. It just felt fitting to have that going while what I was going to tell you about. Sitting here in my squeaky chair, get this thing set around. Okay, this is something, well, it's awesome. I love the idea of this. I'm a castle freak to start with, right? I love the idea of old castles. Like I said, it always goes back to Lord of the Rings. It always goes back to the fantasy worlds. It's all because of that and those stories. But this story in particular, this is Tasha's fault. She sent this, talked to me. She's a good friend of mine and fired this off. And yeah, she knew. And it just hooked me and brought me in. I'm like, oh, I need to talk to y'all. They've other stories, of course, around here on it. But this is just fun. This is something that's unsettling, that's creepy, that's weird, and I think you're going to enjoy it. So tonight, or today, or whenever you're listening, at this very moment in your ears, I'm going to take you on a deep, deep into the shadow forests of Bohemia, right? Yeah, we're going to a place called Huska Castle. It's known as the Gateway to Hell. Yeah, where something may be trapped in this castle. But the history, the whole buildup to this thing is great. I would love to go see it. You know, it's one of those things. It's just recently been, well, I say recently, as compared to other things, where we could go and you can go hang out and check it out. But it all starts about 47 miles north of Prague, perched on a limestone cliff overlooking beautiful, dense pine woods. It's Huska Castle. Now, from a distance, this thing looks like any other badass Gothic fortress, right? It's well-preserved, thick stone walls. There's a central courtyard, narrow windows, and a chapel of frescoes that's watched over this land for more than seven centuries. That's a pretty hot minute. But something is deeply wrong here at this place. There's almost no outward facing defenses. The arrow slits in this castle and the battlements point inward toward the heart of the castle. Right there, you know, like, what is this? First thing I thought of was a prison, right? It's where the guards watch over what you keep inside. There's no natural spring or well here, only a cistern for rainwater. And it sets far off of trade routes. It's far from any strategic border. It's far from any village that even needed protecting. And when it was completed in the late 13th century under King Otakar II of Bohemia, it was nearly empty. Historians, they call it an administrative center. But the people that lived around there in the shadows of those cliffs, well, they told a different story. They say that Huska was built directly over a bottomless pit. a gaping wound in the earth that all the locals in that area referred to, for as long as most could remember, the hole to hell. Yeah, that's right. We got another portal to hell, folks, right in the middle of beautiful Prague. So long before the first foundation for the castle was laid, the forest around that cliff was a place known for terror, basically, after dark. Farmers would whisper amongst themselves, right, of this great chasm that had opened in the rocks. And they say that it was so deep that stones were thrown off into there, vanished without a sound. Now, another interesting part is they said at night you could go there and that the hole was breathing. So like a cave system, right? Wind coming out instantly. Of course, back then you may have no idea about the cave systems. Farmers, I can't imagine, no knock against them, not on their fault. Can't imagine them being highly educated just on the things that we find common. Like the fact that you know caves exist, you can go and check them out. And they may have had no idea, right, of what's going on. They're just like, this hole is super deep, super creepy, and it's breathing. No big deal, something natural. Yeah, hold on. Strange half-human, half-animal creatures crawled out of this hole in the darkness, okay? Beings with the torsos of men, the heads of monstrous beasts, winged humanoids, they said, with large leathery, like winged membranes, would glide silently around this hole. Yeah, yeah. It's reported that they slaughtered livestock, left triangle-shaped wounds on the animals. Huh? Wait, what? It even goes on to say reports of villagers sometimes being dragged back to that hole screaming. And it is said that those that remained around the pit curious for too long, especially around sunset and right after dark, said they changed. People said that their eyes would get strange looking. They said that their voice would change the way they spoke. So, of course, the villagers were like, that's enough of that. Get your pitchforks, get your fire out. We're going to go burn the monster. No, fire bad. No. They start getting rocks. Now, I picture just lines of people with wheelbarrows that they've made, maybe carts if they have something to drag a cart with, loaded with rocks, loaded with logs, any debris that they basically could find laying around. They're like, this is what we're doing. And they start throwing it in there, right? Hucking it in there, filling this thing up. It's like, look, this is what we're doing. They tried this. They tried prayers. Ringed in hands, right? Holding hands in a ring around this area. Groups of people holding masses. They're trying everything they can. It is said that they actually took holy water or blessed water, buckets full of blessed water, throwing in this hole. It really seemed to not do anything at this point, right? Nothing, no effect seemed to be had at all. It was still reported that the livestock and demons and things that were seen around there. Now, I'm not saying they didn't, right? We have no idea. None of us were there. If you were, let me know. None of us were there. So it's probably safe to assume that, you know, it could have easily been maybe a misidentification of a bird or an animal, like buzzards or hawks or eagles or who knows, right? Or maybe there was something extremely dark coming out of there. We're not really sure, right? We're just going off the hearsay of these old stories. But, so like I said, they made this idea. We're going to seal this whole thing forever. But they wanted to know for sure. Right? We're going to have to double down on this. We need to know really what's down there. So there is a story that talks of a condemned prisoner. And I love the idea of this, right? Nobody volunteered. So, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to take this condemned prisoner and we're going to offer you a bargain. We're going to put you on a little swing and we're going to lower you tied into this thing on a rope down into that pit. All we need you to do is report back to us what you see, okay? You come back alive. You survive this lowering down. We bring you back up. You're free to go. You're done. Now, I'm sure it's not some kind of crazy crime. They don't talk about the prisoner. Instantly, you think about the prison, you think a man condemned to death. Maybe the dude was just condemned to, I don't know, hard labor because he was stealing eggs or something. We don't know what kind of fella this is. So don't get construed that, oh, it's a murderer or it's, you know, somebody horrible, or it could have just easily been, you know, misunderstood. Who knows? So just think about this. Just a dude maybe in the wrong place at the wrong time. He's just ready to go. He's like, look, I've made some mistakes. Yeah, tie me on this rope. Let's go. So they get him out, right? Bring him over. They secure him into this rope. All the guys get in. There's dudes holding this rope. He's like, all right, let's do it. Butt's leaning in. He starts kind of rappelling down as they let him down into this hole. They said for the first few moments, as he's going, they lose sight of him, right? He's going, they're letting him down in there. He's dangling over the hole. Whee! There's only silence. There's nothing. He's just waiting. And thinking about being this guy, I'd like to believe he wasn't from the area, so he didn't know all the stories, right? He just thought there was a bunch of silliness from some crazy villagers. I'd hate to think it was a guy that was from that place and had grown up there and in and around that area. You have to be terrified at this point because you've heard all the stories. You know, you're like, well, I'm okay. So, as I say, silence. They said then, from deep, deep down in that hole, they're lowering him down in there, they hear a scream. And they say this fellow's scream was raw terror, that it scared the men above the hole. Holding the ropes bad, they almost dropped them. So they all, everybody around, every free person gets on that rope. They start dragging him up, right? We're bringing him up as fast as we can. But what popped up out of this hole was no longer the young man that they say they had sent down. The story goes that this fella comes up out of there with snow white hair, right, which is great for the story, that his face was wrinkled and aged as if decades had passed in minutes, that he was babbling incoherently about claws reaching for him from the darkness, about eyes burning like coals at the bottom of the world staring at him, and about voices that he heard that promised him eternal suffering. Now, the story goes that he never spoke clearly after this break that he had, and that within a few days he died from the madness. No sleeping, no eating, no nothing. Just lost all of his sanity after spending what might have been 120 seconds or so, 3 or 4 minutes max down in the bottom, right? Or at least down in the darkness. Now, there are other accounts that you'll find that says they tried it again. They actually got a few more prisoners, and the story goes the results were exactly the same. Every time they brought one up, completely lost it, snow white hair. It was like they were just feeding their energy to whatever they were. They're just fishing, but really feeding, right? Down to whatever's down there. So the workers in and around that area that were brought in were desperate at this point. We have to clear this up, or cover this up, rather. So massive stone slabs they drug over the mouth of this pit. And directly on top of those slabs, they raised a chapel. And they dedicated that chapel to Archangel Michael, the slayer of demons. The frescoes on the wall still remain in this chapel, of Archangel Michael battling dragons, of souls being weighed. And then there's some other wild stuff. When I say other wild stuff, there's centaur-like creatures. Yeah, upper body of a lady, lower body of a horse. And the cool thing is she's got a bow and arrow. That's pretty awesome, right? Looks like she's drawing a bow. There's demonic faces. There's these hybrids, type creatures that are on there that look exactly like what the stories the villagers had described. So whether one of them put it in there, whether whatever it was, the artist, who knows, or it was a true account of what was going on, we have no idea. But the rest of the castle was built around that chapel like a cage. Like I said, thick walls, inward-facing defenses, and a fortress designed to contain what's in there, not hold out. Right? No repelling here, containing here. So for centuries, they say everything, it seemed to work. All right? But the story says, like, the things below were never truly asleep. And that's when things start getting wild, that throughout the castle's history, there is specific ghost encounters that have been recorded again and again. In the courtyard of the castle, many have seen a headless apparition, a man stumbling forward with blood spurting violently from the stump of his neck as if freshly severed. This fella appears suddenly. He walks a few steps and vanishes. And those that have been there when this has happened say that it leaves behind the metallic smell of fresh blood. Yeah. Yeah, like that copper smell is still there after seeing it. They also see everyone's favorite shadow people. Yeah, that sounds fun, right? Tall, black, featureless figures, right? Just shadow beings. And they are the most commonly reported. Let me say that again for those in the back. You go there, you're probably going to see shadow people. They're the most commonly reported. One in particular is known as the Guardian. Those that have seen it describe it as standing motionless in doorways or at the top of staircases as if watching over the chapel. And when approached, it simply steps backward into the darkness, disappears. Some will tell you that it feels protective in their presence. Others say that the sheer presence of this thing fills the air with crushing dread. That sounds great. Now, in the halls, in the chambers, visitors and staff have repeatedly encountered the Frogman. That's right, folks, everybody's favorite. It's always one of my favorite, Frogman. It's a grotesque hybrid creature with the body of a large, powerful man, the slick, wet skin and bulging eyes of a giant bullfrog, and the snarling jaws of a bulldog. A lot of bull here, if you know what I'm saying. Who knows what this is? But they say it's been seen hopping or shambling through corridors, leaving a trail of damp footprints that evaporate within minutes. And those who have glimpsed it, this is the coolest part, report an overwhelming smell of rot and sulfur. Again, do we name it because it looks kind of like a frog and all those? Or obviously, this is some kind of demon. Whatever this pit demon thing is. All I know is I saved all of these descriptions so I can turn these into monsters that Kyle and the boys are going to have to fight eventually. I don't know what Frogman's name's going to be, but Frogman is awesome. Here's something that's not so awesome. I would rather see Frogman than an old woman. A ghostly old woman in tattered period clothing, right? So looks like an old village lady, appears most often in the upper rooms. She stands silently in the corners. Her face is said to be twisted in what could be described as rage or grief. And it watches the guests with hollow eyes. And some have even reported hearing her whispering in what they describe as an ancient dialect before she fades away. So, makes me think, is she watching over it? Is she there still doing a job? Was she one of the women that maybe gave herself to just prayer? Daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, that's what she is, a real prayer warrior. She stood and stayed in this castle, along with others, dedicated their lives to keeping the prayer and the chant going to keep whatever this is in there. Was that what it was? But perhaps reportedly the most terrifying is the headless black horse. Not the headless horseman. The horse itself is headless, and it gallops through the courtyard there at night. Witnesses say they hear the thunder of hooves on stone. They even see sparks flying and catch the flash of a riderless saddle before this apparition dissolves into a dark mist. There have been a few claims that the horse's eyes even glowed red. Poltergeist activity is common here. Objects move on their own. Doors slam. Chairs drag across the floors. Glasses and plates levitate and shatter. Electronic equipment fail without reason. Batteries drain in minutes. And cameras just stop recording in the mid-investigation. Now, there is a very disturbing, what some say, one of the most disturbing personal accounts comes from the 19th century. And it was a Czech poet named Karl Heinrich Macha and spent the night in Huska in 1836. Ooh, I bet that was a scary time to be in Huska. And in a letter to a friend, he describes a vivid dream in which his soul descended into the pit and was hurled forward through time to a hellish vision of Prague in the year 2006. A mechanical nightmare of towering concrete blocks glowing with eerie yellow light. That dream, or vision, stuck with him his entire life. He made comments about it, remarks about it to those, until he died, is about what he had happened to him there. Now, modern visitors that go in there, they have all kinds of stuff go down, right? The tour guides, the ghost hunters, they've reported hearing muffled screams. They've reported hearing cries rising directly from beneath the chapel floor, as if thousands of tormented voices layered on top of one another were crying out. That sounds great. Another describes sudden drops in temperature, so severe you can see your breath. Yeah, yeah. They say it's also followed by the unmistakable feeling of invisible hands brushing against your skin and slightly tugging against your clothing. One investigator described watching a black shadow figure step out from behind a wardrobe early one morning, walk slowly across the room just before vanishing. There was a group of musicians stayed there overnight. They claimed to hear very heavy breathing and wet slapping footsteps in one of the rooms. And the footsteps, they said, matched no living person. So when you start hearing wet slapping footsteps, I'm thinking of the frog guy, right? Always the joke, like the frog running. You think of the frog guy. A lot of people, and this is what's weird, leave the castle and then attribute things to it like it affected them or their aura, their vibe, their energy, their belief, whatever it is, it's affected them. In so much of a way that they report a string of unexplainable bad luck, like financial issues, accidents, illness. They said it's like something connected to them and then followed them home. Or maybe it was not necessarily connected, a stain, right, that's on them, that you stay there a little too long. Now, during the Nazi occupation from 1939 to 1945, the SS took control of the castle, despite, of course, its military value. Right now, we all know about occultism and what the Nazis were going to. So the records were destroyed during the retreat there, but the surrounding area was heavily mined. And a lot of rumors of the folks that lived in this area say that there was occult rituals going on there, that they were what was believed to attempting to harness the power of whatever was in that pit, and that they were experiments conducted in the lower levels of this place. But they said whatever they did in that little window of time there, that the castle has never recovered, in the fact that people say that it was already creepy, but that the feeling there has never been the same. I don't know if it's been turned up. I don't know what's going on. So Huska Castle, and I said, you can go see it. It didn't open to the public until 1999. And then that's when people started flooding in, that those that knew about it. Ghost Hunter International television crews went there. Most Haunted have gone there, and they've got some wild stuff you can go check out. There's a special, like a nighttime ghost tour that takes place there if you want to go and cruise around there in the dark. But after hearing it, stuff might come on, you know, bring you home. Who knows? It's privately owned. The castle is still privately owned, I believe, by the descendants of Joseph Samonic. I believe their family still owns the entire thing. It is forbidden to do any excavation beneath the castle. None of that. Now, they still get reports for those that go there. There's still endless reports all the time. Disembodied voices, like I said, apparitions, equipment malfunctions, and this crazy feeling, right? This crazy feeling that something is off. Something's not right whatsoever. When I think about this, like I said before, I think about, like, if the Nazis and the occult and all the stuff was going on there, what is in the lower areas of this? Did they dig new holes, new caverns, new pathways? What is in that castle? Like, is there things that they're not letting the public go into that they've sealed up? Or is there still, like, who knows? It's such a fascinating story. But we still don't really know what it is, right? So what actually is it? Is it just a natural sinkhole that the people there attributed a bunch of stuff to, and then now it's kind of grown and it's done, you know, hauntings or whatever, and it's, is it, you know, real? Is it just a curiosity, right? Is that all it is? Or is there a 750 plus year old prison built above a pit there to make sure nothing leaves? Is that what it is? Is that why the chapel is still directly above it? Is that why all that stuff is still left there to kind of keep it on there? I don't know. People have said that if you go and visit, and you know, and you're going to stay some, you know, a day or so, that if you go and visit and you stand in the courtyard at sunset, and many have talked about this, that as the sun sets, you can actually feel like the hair on your body rising, right? Like you start getting this strange feeling. Now, I remember reading stories with this, talking about they believed that the hole was a meteorite, right? That they believe it hit into a canyon. Maybe there was something hit there years ago, and it's magnetically changing things. And that's what it is it's more of a, I don't necessarily say a ley line, I guess it could be, but it was more of a magnetic anomaly that was going on there. And that's what kind of caused all this. I have one little thing to throw in here with it to see if you've ever heard of Yester Castle. And that's in East Lothian, Scotland, I believe is how I didn't pronounce that right. It was constructed again in the 12th to 13th century. And it's a ruin near the village of Gifford. It's funny enough, it was associated with Sir Hugo de Gifford, or Hugh Gifford, the nickname the Wizard of Yester, because it's Yester Castle. He was a historic figure who advised Scottish kings, and he was like known to be into the occult and have this occult knowledge. And some even said he was a necromancer, and that the castle right now is largely in ruins, but there's a large underground vaulted chamber that's known as Goblin Hall or Goblin Ha. And it's underneath it. Now, this is what makes it interesting. Again, we're going back into that stuff that local folklore, like I believe is back into the 15th century, claims that a fellow named Hugo, okay, made a pact with the devil, summoned an army of goblins from hell, who built the castle and specifically built the Goblin Hall, the subterranean hall, for themselves, and it was done in one night. When we say goblins, some think hobgoblins, right? The big versions of goblins. That the underground hall was said to be a place of dark ritual, sorcery, and necromancy. And from the main chamber, a dark, narrow stone staircase descends even deeper underground. This staircase is known, specifically given the nickname, the Gateway to Hell or Gates of Hell. And that the legend holds that this leads directly to the underworld, and this is basically a stairway to the goblins and the goblin underworld. Visitors to this castle report strange lights, noises of revelry or construction. Sounds pretty wild, right? Cold spots, and of course the feelings of dread. And some describe shadowy figures that they see that resemble goblin-like entities. People that go down the stairs, get into the Goblin Hall, say that it is a very oppressive feeling being in the presence of this room. Now, access is now restricted. There's an iron gate. They say it's partly due to safety, but also due to vandalism. The site still remains a magnet, of course, for paranormal investigators. Everybody goes there. The nearby hills in this area is also said to be linked to the gates of hell. When you start talking about these things, it does kind of feel magnetic, right? It starts feeling like, ooh, what's the vibe like as we're getting in here? Today, of course, the ruins are in a woodland. It's popular with hikers. And like I said, the ghost hunters go there. But it is like a lot of the same vibe of whatever's going on comes from below, right? Which is like the Huska Castle. It's whatever this is was kind of put there to keep over it. Believe it's County Offaly, Leap Castle in Ireland, is known as the most haunted castle in Ireland. Some argue it's even in the world. It's not necessarily built along the idea of a pure portal to hell, but there is a deep pit that many say is some form of demonic pit in this area. It was built in the late 13th or 14th century. There's earlier fortifications that go back. It was long held by the O'Carroll clan, O'Carrolls. It was known for betrayal, right? And murder. There was a famous incident of a priest that was the brother of a lord that was a priest there that was murdered mid-mass in what became known as the Bloody Chapel. But in the Bloody Chapel is this secret dungeon chamber that has a trap door. And the story goes that prisoners or any unwanted guests to the chapel were dropped through a narrow hole onto wooden spikes in this area. But in 1922, workers found enough human skeletons and bones to fill 3 cartloads. So over 150 remains, plus a mid-1800s pocket watch showing that it was used for centuries. Yeah, this was a murder hole that was like a bottomless pit of death that they would just drop you in and move on. Yeah, over 150 folks tossed off down in there. But the most feared presence of that castle isn't human ghosts. Get a load of this, folks. It's an elemental, a non-human shape-shifting entity that emits a foul stench of rotting flesh and sulfur. It is said to predate the castle. It's possibly a druidic guardian or spirit of the land, and they believe it had been summoned there for protection through occultism. Yeah. Now, there's a person named Mildred Darby. Mildred Darby was early a 20th century owner who dabbled in the occult. Yeah. Describing the whole encounter in detail of this malevolent force that was called, I believe, like the Red Lady. Anyway, this whole thing has a dagger. Look, the whole place seems to be keyed around this murder hole or whatever it is that they're dropping these people into. So it seems like each and every one of these things, of course, maybe aside from the elemental, comes from that one as well. So Huska Castle isn't alone in its madness, right? This same castle here, they all have these cold spots. They all have these things where people see these entities, feel these entities. I think it's safe to say, and if you think of it as such, if you were to take a large city that we have now, any large city that we have now, and it was abandoned for a long time, right? And it went on, and then people found it, and it was just folklore about if you went down there, that's where bad things happen. But you could still feel that in any building, in anything. We know, all of you listening, you know that those vibes are out there. You can feel their. We talk about this, right? You know it. You feel the cold spots. It's all the things reported. Well, they're happening here. So I'm sure there were good things happening in and around these castles, and then terrible things. But Huska Castle seems to be just a castle built for terrible things. It's not like these regular castles that had these added to them. Huska was built on top of something and designed to keep whatever that was at bay. What that is, we have no idea, and I really don't want to find out. I don't have that on the bingo card right now, and there's so much going on. I don't need some monster escaping some Prague castle. So I hope you enjoyed the Huska Castle. I enjoyed it. It was fun. It sparked a lot of creative thinking of now something that I need to add to some story that I'm working on. Like, again, for the fellas at the table, so I can see if I can crush them. I hope you enjoyed it. I enjoyed telling it. Let's take a quick break. When we get back, I'll have to see what Fizzy thinks about all this. See if he's down with a little creepy Huska Castle, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And we are back.
Man, that's such an interesting story.
That's a crazy place, right?
Years ago, before my father's stroke, my mother and him went over to Czech Republic and Germany and stuff like that. And they said, they were telling me about all the castles. Like, you just see castles everywhere.
Everywhere.
People are just living them.
Man.
I mean, how cool is that to live in a castle?
I would love to go see one of the old, like, maybe not that castle, but some cool old castles.
Yeah, right.
You know, go just, check something
just
like that.
Just to see that part of the world.
Yeah, and it all goes back to the nostalgia of fantasy, right? Is it's just, I'm just drawn to the idea. Like
Switzerland, that's where I want to go, Switzerland.
How cool would it have been to grow up in a giant castle?
Yeah.
Like right now. I don't mean back then. I'm talking like right now.
Yeah, you have the inside renovated, so it's all modern on the inside.
Yeah, like you have dreams of like you get, all of a sudden, you get this message and you end up meeting with like a lawyer and you find out you had some long lost relatives and they've left you this old abandoned castle.
I want a trebuchet and everything.
And now you're talking. I'm with you on that. And I need a moat. Yeah. I need all of it, right? I need like murder holes and arrow slits. I need all of it.
Would you put like alligators in the moat?
No. I'd put big, beautiful carp in the moat to make it make you think everything was cool.
Koi fish.
Then I'd put lasers on their head. Anyway.
What would you use for protection? As far as, would you have like guard
guns?
Dogs? Or instead of a guard dog, would you use a hyena?
Dude, if I could, I would love to have like a pet hyena. I've seen like videos of like guys, it's people
in
that
Africa,
have got them.
Yeah.
I mean like here, dudes have got, like a guy's got one that rides around in his car with him, in his truck with him.
Well, maybe one got loose. Check this out. In 2010. In the southern Adirondacks of New York, within Adirondack Park.
They make good chairs.
My wife and I saw what can only be described as a hyena chasing several deer across the road.
Hyena. Here he goes.
All right.
Come on.
Luke couldn't pronounce hyena
when he was little.
When he was a kid, so he would say hyena. So we just always use that term. It's better than hyena.
Oh, my Lord.
To the amazement of many people, the Adirondacks are part of America's largest protected wilderness region in the lower 48 states. That is where this happened. The animal literally stopped dead in front of our car and stared back at us for about 10 seconds before it moved off. I've been in the woods my entire life. I was raised with a gun since childhood, and I spent my summers on Lake Champlain. I've hunted, fished, instructed at archery and rifle ranges. I've hiked, coon hunted at night, owned horses, ridden horseback through wilderness areas, and I presently live with all kinds of wildlife on my lakefront creekside property. I thought I'd seen it all, but I have no idea what that animal was, other than to say it looked exactly like a hyena. It was very large, approximately 150 to 175 pounds. It had a long, bushy tail and a brindle, wiry, spotted coat that appeared brown, black, and gray. The animal had a powerful predator build, a thick lower jaw, and a rounded diamond-shaped head, a triangular head, if you would. It had rounded ears that sat high on the head, and what appeared to be a mane that ran down the back, beginning at the neck. Its hind legs were noticeably shorter than its front legs. They also appeared thick and powerfully muscled. The overall body gave the animal a sloped-like look. I've seen countless hyenas on the Discovery Channel, in National Geographic, and on Wild Kingdom as a kid. There is no other animal in the world that I could compare it to. This strongly resembled, well, a spotted hyena. I immediately went home and searched for more information. Amazingly, I found references claiming that so-called mountain hyena once roamed the Adirondacks or Appalachians. Well, I have news. At least one still does. My wife and I called New York Environmental Conservation and Ray Brook when we got home, and we were laughed at. We even received an errant email response that ridiculed my report. It apparently had been accidentally sent to me instead of to an Encon coworker. This made me very angry, especially because I had made friends with my local environmental conservation officer who liked to use my property to catch poachers. There's an animal park at the end of the lake, so I called them as well. They assured me they have never seen or heard of anyone else seeing spotted hyenas.
Dude.
Anyways, only shortly after this, I saw the Monster Quest episode describing a similar animal in Maine, the Skunka Werkaken, often referred to in cryptozoological literature as the dog killer. These have also been compared to hyena-like animals. However, the famous mounted Skunka Werkaken species or specimen seems far too small and more pig-like compared to what I saw. Its legs are far too scrawny, and it appears far less canine than the animal that we encountered. It also has a longer, straighter coat and a thinner snout. Then a few days later, we saw the same animal again doing the same thing. There is no doubt in my mind, this was not a coyote. This was not a wolf hybrid or a coy dog. This was a hyena. I've seen it all, especially while riding horseback. You name it, I've probably seen it. And I can identify it. But I've never seen anything like this. The closest comparison I can make is a spotted hyena. There you go.
Dude, I've done a whole segment we did on that Skunkawarin or whatnot.
Yeah.
I did a whole thing on that. Yeah.
So, I mean, but listen, like you just said, you've seen videos of a guy riding around with a truck. Is it impossible that someone had one as a pet, couldn't take care of it, and let him go? Loose?
Yeah. Yeah, and it maybe finds others and all that. Like, who knows? With people in their pet collection these days, I don't put anything past it.
But, I mean, it's far more believable than a rake or a pail crawler or something. Yeah. This is just a real animal, a spotted hyena.
Yeah.
Seems very logical to me.
Yeah.
I don't think people appreciate how big hyenas are.
No.
They're not like dogs.
Well, I didn't until you start seeing them with people.
Yeah.
And when you start seeing them beside people, like when they're full grown, you're like, ooh. Like, what is it? There was an Africa dude with an AK and got one on a chain. Right, and you're like, I did not realize that thing was that big.
I remember I was convinced of how large they were when I was watching that old documentary with the lions and the hyenas, the Eternal Enemies or whatever it's called.
Yes.
You're talking about a big male lion. The hyena is almost the same size.
He's pretty good sized. Entoi Tumela.
Yeah, right.
Eternal Enemies. That is a great old school. I think it's actually on YouTube. We've talked about it. I think you can still watch that series.
Probably.
With the twin brother lions that... Yeah, the lion killer, the hyena killer is in Entoi Tumela, he who greets with fire.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, that was a great
one. It's because they're constantly battling each other over food.
So JP writes in, he gets this little thing here. It says, it was the summer of 2000 in Knox County, Missouri, near a small village called Colony. Just north of there is the North Fabius River, where there used to be a concrete bridge. I frequently fished this small river, often beneath the bridge, where there was usually a fairly deep hole. One night, I was fishing on the east side of the bridge along the south bank. As I watched my fishing poles, I suddenly heard a large crashing sound directly across the river. It sounded like something large was crashing through the trees. I looked in that direction, and I saw a large object flying through the air toward the river. At first, most of what I could see were enormous wings. The figure landed in the middle of the river on a sandbar that divided the water into two smaller channels. It landed just to the left of where I cast my line, perhaps 20 foot away. Now, it was definitely dark, but I had a citronella candle burning inside of a bucket. The candle provided enough light for me to see most of the figure's outlines. Now, I will never forget the size of its wings or the way it landed. It came down just like a bird. The wings appeared to be white, or at least light enough that I could see them fairly easily. The figure stood upright like a man and seemed to have a man's body. Its wings were enormous. When folded, they may have extended a foot or two above the top of the body. From what I could tell, most of its body appeared naked, but I could see some type of straps crossing its chest. I could not see its face. It looked as though it was wearing a helmet and face shield. I described it that way because the head looked exactly like the helmet worn by the DC comic superhero Hawkman. The face shield was pointed and resembled the face of a bird. Like the Hawkman character, the figure also appeared to have wing-shaped pieces extending from the sides of its helmet. I believed it was a helmet because it appeared to be a different color or shade from the rest of the body. After landing, it stood completely upright with its wings folded against its body, and it remained motionless for a very long time, although I could see the water moving around it. I continued staring at it, afraid to move. I cannot say exactly how much time passed, but it did seem like a long time. Eventually, the figure began moving, and it appeared to have a large vase or vessel in one hand. It dipped the object into the river and poured water over itself, particularly over its right wing. I wondered whether it had been injured. The way it crashed through the trees made me think that something might have happened to the wing. After pouring the water, it stood upright again and became completely motionless. It was so still that it eventually looked more like a post than a living being. I watched it for at least another 20 to 30 minutes, and it didn't move. I was terrified. I kept thinking that it had to be able to see me, or at least see the burning citronella candle. So I began telling myself that I was seeing what I was seeing could not be real. I had two fishing poles with me, but only one was cast into the river. I slowly began reeling in that line while keeping my eyes on the figure. The wind was blowing the citronella smoke directly in my face. It was almost all I could breathe as I finally reeled in or finished reeling in this fishing line. I picked up the candle bucket and moved it from my right side to my left. Without warning, the figure leaped forward and dove into the water. Water splashed into the air and the wake rolled toward the riverbank. I immediately grabbed my fishing poles and ran up the bank. I kept falling as I tried to escape. I was completely panicked and convinced that this thing might be coming after me. I finally made it past the rocks, climbed above the riverbank, and reached the road. I ran straight to my truck and got out. And even while driving away, I thought it might be following me. I remained frightened for quite some time after this encounter. And looking back now, however, I sometimes wonder whether the creature was just as scared as I was. So Hawkman landed somewhat injured in the, and then just dove in looking for fish himself, I guess. Now, the interesting thing for me in this story isn't the fact it's Hawkman. It's JP never really gives the size.
Right.
So we're not really sure. Is it average height? Is it a 6-footer? Is it a 7-footer? Is it a 5.5, 5? Like, how big is this thing? Because every time I think of anything of flying humanoid, my mind always goes to like an 8-foot giant, you right. know, thing. This may not have been that, because I'm instantly like, well, how deep was the water, right? How big was the area that it was diving into? What is the water a portal? Is it something that it put the water on? What is going on with the water? What is it there for? Did the douse of the water not work? So he decided to go for a swim. Like, what is it? The JP saw. I have no idea, but it sounds like the Hogman. Hope you enjoyed the stories, folks. Hope you enjoyed all the madness of walking trees and hyenas and cicada men and Huska Castle.
Yeah, it was an excellent show.
Got some craziness.
If you have any stories you'd like to share with Cam and I, as well as the listeners, you can email the show expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the hotline 888-393-2783. Don't forget about our book, The Glimmer Man. You can go on Amazon and get yourself a copy.
Yep.
If you want an autographed copy, you can just email Attention Big Fizzy, you want an autographed copy of the book?
The Fizz.
And we'll ship it out to you.
He's got that fizz, folks.
We got a busy schedule coming up. We're going to be out of town quite a bit. I'm going to the coast pretty soon. And then I'm heading up to Memphis with you. And then we're going other places. So it's going to be busy. And then school starts.
And then school fires up.
And the next thing you know, the year's over. Like, I can't believe it's already halfway over.
Yeah, but deer season comes before that. So we're good. Cooler weather, little time to be in the woods. We may need to do some fishing.
Yeah, 100%.
We got some fishing we need to take care of.
I've been looking. I need to get me a new rod and reel. The one I have, I haven't used in a while. I'm like, man, you know what? I just need to get a new one.
Do yourself a favor and get you one. You deserve it.
Right? I will.
You deserve it.
I will.
Give it to you for yourself for Father's Day.
And I got a birthday coming up.
You do, old timer. That's a zero birthday you got coming up.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to it.
Take that with you. It's not bad.
All right.
It's not great, but it's not bad. It beats the alternative.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
That's true. Very true.
That's what we got.
All right, everybody. I hope everybody has a good week. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here. And if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.